is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. The police department down in Texas has put out a video of the traffic stop, which the corporate media keeps referring to as a routine traffic stop. It's not routine to pull somebody over because they changed lanes to get out of the way of a police car without using their turn signal. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you pull somebody over for if you intend to harass them. But people change lanes without turn signals all the time. Technically, it's illegal, but come on, give me a break. And that video has been is being looked at rather skeptically by a whole bunch of people. One of them, Ben Norton, independent journalist. BenNorton.com is his website. He's on the line with us. Hey, Ben, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Tell us, you went through this dash cam video of Sandra Bland's arrest. What did you find?
Well, it's a long video, and like many Americans, when it was first uploaded, I skimmed through it to see how this police officer assaulted this young woman. And while I was skimming through it, I noticed some discrepancies in the video. I noticed if you look around the 30-minute mark, if you go to my article, which is now in Alternet and a few other places as well, if you look at the article, I have time frames listed, moments at which a car will drive into the frame, and then seconds later, that car will suddenly disappear. And this happens multiple times, and if you look, entire clips of footage are actually looped. And for instance, at one moment around the 30-minute mark, a white car drives into the frame four times total. The same footage is repeated four times.
Right.
And then when I saw that, I was immediately struck. I mean, there's clearly there are discrepancies in this footage, and something happened. And I looked further. I skimmed through other parts of the video, and then I noticed, for me, what is the most compelling instance and likely evidence of editing is around 25 minutes, a man who's in a truck steps out of the truck, and he walks for approximately 15 seconds out of the frame, and then the exact footage repeats, the exact same footage.
Right. Meanwhile, the audio is consistent. It appears to have integrity, although audio is more easily edited than video, I suppose.
Yes. I just did an interview, actually, with a Texas station, because this all happened in Texas. And that was one of the points I made, is that it's very hard to tell if audio has been edited, just because audio is easy to edit. But what's fascinating about this is it appears as though the footage has been edited. We'll get into the department's reaction in a moment. But if the video has indeed been edited, and it appears it has, the audio was not edited. It was maintained separately.
Well, we don't know that. I mean, it may well be that the video is edited in order to take out the audio that they didn't want in that particular place.
Well, there are no suspicious signs that it was edited, but like you said, it may very well
right.
have been.
I mean, we had an audio and video, actually, for a living here. I can
exactly.
tell you, editing audio is a hell of a lot easier than editing video. And, with a good editing program, you can take things down to a millisecond or even a fraction of a millisecond. They say that this was just a glitch, an upload glitch or whatever, and that they're going to release the actual footage. The other thing that Jim and who's our video guy and Shane, who's our audio guy, and I were watching and listening to this this morning and watching the audio on an oscilloscope kind of thing, and it seems, fairly clear to all of us that this guy's wearing a body mic. When he yells, it overmodulates. There's clipping. There's something in there that's clipping it off. When she talks, even when she's yelling, it doesn't overmodulate. And do you think it's possible that he was wearing a body camera? Because if this was just a highly directional mic on the front of the police car, it seems like both of them should have hit that clipping on when they overmodulated, when they talked too loudly.
Well, it's hard to say about the body camera. Clearly, the audio is of very high quality, and that is not dash cam audio, if there even is audio on the dash cam video.
Right. So is he picking it up off his walkie-talkie, or is he mic'd? And if he's mic'd, is he wearing, you know, the other question it raises is he wearing a body camera? That's number one. And then number two, we've got a short clip. I just want to play this. It's 36 seconds. This is Sandra Bland getting out of the car, holding onto her cell phone, and the police officer, what's his name? I don't have it here in front of me. I should. Saying, you know, put down the phone. And she's like, I've got a right to record this. I don't know where that phone is. Here's the clip.
I said, get out of the car.
Why am I being apprehended?
I'm giving you lawful orders. I'm going to drag you out of here.
So you're going to drag me out of my own car?
Get out of the car!
Right. And then you
I will light
me?
You up. Get out!
Wow.
Now!
Wow.
Get out of the car!
Really, for a failure to signal. You're doing all of this for
get
a
get over there.
Right, yeah. Yeah, let's take this to court. Let's do
go ahead.
For a failure to signal. Yep, for a failure to signal.
Get off the phone.
On my school.
Get off the phone.
I'm not on the phone. I have a right
put
to record.
Put your phone
this
down.
My property.
This put your phone
property.
Down.
Sir?
Put your phone down right now. Put your phone down.
So, Ben Norton, any idea where that phone is?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are a lot of questions that need to be answered, and there needs to be a thorough investigation done. On this point, this is actually an important point that many people are overlooking. Brian Encinia is the name of the officer who arrested and assaulted her, and he actually was placed on desk duty. He's currently under investigation, and his department admitted that although they were kind of parsimonious in the words they offered, they did admit that he did not follow protocol, and they said something to the effect that he was not polite, clearly.
Right.
So there are many different questions. I think before we move on, there's one point that I wanted to make that I think is very important that many people are overlooking.
Go for it.
And I just spoke on BBC about an hour ago, and a law professor raised a really interesting point that many people have raised. You know, there's a lot of speculations going on. The protocol for most police videos is to have time code. It's, you know, it's usually at the bottom of the video, and it shows, you know, the actual time at which that video was recorded.
Right.
On this video, there is no time code, which is already alone rather suspicious.
Yeah, it,
so there
it makes it
reasons.
Seem that the video has been cropped.
Well, there are a few different possibilities. The department could claim that this camera doesn't have time code. That's a possibility, but we'd have to look at other videos and other cameras, and that seems to be improbable.
Yeah.
So what's likely is that one of two things were done. If the footage was indeed edited and there was a time code, they either, like you said, cropped it out, or they just zoomed in the footage.
Right.
And when you zoom in the footage, you can just
right. And I'm thinking that they zoomed in the footage. I mean, we've got bystander video of him basically with his knee in the middle of her back. And usually, dash cam video cameras are not, you know, your basic straight on lens. They're slightly wide angle lens, so they catch, you know, 100, 120, 130 degrees of view rather than just, you know, the 90 degrees in front of them. And if that's the case, that dash cam video may well have got him beating her up by the side of the road, basically, and they've cropped it to get that out of it.
Yeah, that's a major possibility. I mean, there are a lot of questions involved here, and we should be very skeptical and suspicious. When you look at past instances of police brutality and instances like these in which police assault people of color, and, you know, in this case, someone who barely did anything wrong. I mean, as you had mentioned, technically it's illegal to turn without a turn signal, but people do this all the time. And actually, if you listen to what Sandra herself had said, she blamed the cop for speeding behind her
right.
and forcing her to
she
turn.
She said she was trying to get out of his way. And 14 yeah. times she asked him, what are you doing this for?
So I mean, when you look at the case of Walter Scott, who in South Carolina was an unarmed black man who ran away from a cop and shot him in the back several times, there clearly are numerous instances of police claiming that something happened, and then video taken by a bystander is released and shows that the police testimony
shows that that's not the case. Yeah, absolutely. Ben Norton, independent journalist, bennorton.com is the website. Ben, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
Good talking with you. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what the hell is going on here? And, you know, let's keep in mind, this is not all that unusual in America, which is bizarre. Welcome back. Let's see here. Marcia, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Hey, Marcia, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Something very important. Trash bags are contraband. in prison and jail. They're contraband. It's not a hotel. They don't give you garbage cans. A plastic bag could be used as a weapon.
So why was there a plastic bag in her cell? Is that the...
Exactly. The state knows it's murder. They know it's murder. They know she... And she was in processing for 3 days, 2 days.
3 days.
She had been processed and put in with the other people. So they know it's a murder.
Well, this is a local jail. There may not be any other people. But I'm not saying it's not murder. I'm just...
This is true. But the garbage bag... They would have searched her. They would have known if she had something like that. They don't supply you with garbage bags in the prison. They have trustees.
Well, but again, this is not a prison. This is just a small town jail. I mean, a small town jail may not run to the same standards of a state prison.
Jails don't have it either because it could be used for the same reason.
You would think.
You know, another prisoner could pick up a garbage can and hit somebody with it or use the They are not allowed. Trash bags are not allowed in the cells. It's contraband.
Okay. All right. Marcia, thank you for that. Thank you. That's a, you know, another piece to add to the whole thing. Thank you, Marcia. Dave in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, you know, about a couple of years ago, I talked to you shortly after Scott Walker, you know, won his recall thing, you know, and he outspent Tom Barrett like 8-1 with outside money. And then he basically the same thing in his reelection against Mary Burke. You know, all that money from Americans for Prosperity came in and he won that election. And I thought back then, you know, I told you I thought he was talking about, you know, running for president. I thought that'd be the craziest thing I could ever imagine. And here we are, you know, with him actually having a really good chance for this, you know. And I saw an interview the other day where they asked him, what would be the first thing you'd do if you became president? Well, he immediately said he's going to repeal Obamacare, and then he's going to rescind this if this Iran deal goes through.
Right.
And they asked, you know, and he said, oh, he had no problem going to war. This he was, you know.
Right, and had to be ready to do it on day one.
About this, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and it was like, this guy is got this ego and arrogance about him that he thinks he can just get his way because he's been given all this money.
Well, he's got the second richest family in America behind him. He's got a couple of cranky billionaires, you know, who
and it's crazy.
Have subsidized his entire career, basically.
You know, and people are eating this up. You know, outside of Wisconsin, he's, you know, got some popularity. And I don't understand how he got reelected in this state. But, you know, but you had to be here to see just the piles of mail you'd get and the TV ads and everything. I live in the middle of the woods pretty much, and there'd be these big I Stand With Walker signs in the middle of nowhere. Where did they come from?
You know? Yeah. Well, you know, when you got billionaires behind you, you can do a lot. Dave, thanks for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Senator Sanders posted on his YouTube page, or his Facebook page, this video of the arrest of Sandra Bland shows totally outrageous police behavior. No one should be yanked from her car, thrown to the ground, assaulted, and arrested for a minor traffic stop. The result is that 3 days later, she's dead in her jail cell. This video highlights once again why we need real police reform. People should not die for a minor traffic infraction. This type of police abuse has become an all-too-common occurrence for people of color, and it must stop. You know, I keep saying we've got some systemic problems here, and one of the biggest ones, in my opinion, is that we don't pay our police well enough, and therefore we don't have high enough standards for people to become police officers. It's not like in the European countries where, you know, it's a lifetime career. It's very good pay. Cops are actually in the Scandinavian countries. They basically make about what doctors make, and it's about as hard to become a police officer. Well, it's not quite as hard, but it takes a couple of years of college, and there's quite high standards, and it's a very competitive thing. And in many places, not all, but in many places in the United States, it's very much the opposite of that. So, Rennell, am I saying that right in Dacula, Georgia?
Rennell, Dacula.
Okay, Dacula. I lived 13 years in Atlanta. I've never heard of Dacula. Where is it?
Yep. It's North Gwinnett by Lawrenceville.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Area.
Yeah, I know the area. So it says here you're a former police officer?
Yep, 13 years. And I heard the conversation about the body mic, body camera, and wanted to try and shed some light on that, but also had a follow-up comment about the overall incident.
Sure.
The body mic is a body mic. So the camera is connected to a mic pack, and you wear your mic pack on your gun belt, and you can manually turn it on, or you can manually turn it off. So when you hit record, it automatically turns that mic on. And when you're looking at these dash cam videos, you can see top right or top left, MIC, and that means that it's recording both inside of a car as well as on the person's chest. So you see a mic just above their bulletproof vest. You'll see the mic protruding from that. And
that's interesting, which is another indication that this video has been cropped, because there's no time code across the bottom of the video, and there's along the top, there's nothing indicating which microphone is turned on.
Well, each department does it differently. So there have been some situations where they don't want that on the video because it may hide something that's recording on the video. So it may not. They can configure that how they want to configure it, to where you want the time, date shown or not shown, or mic shown.
Right.
It can be configured different ways. But
I
my
see.
Comment was, we need to be careful to separate the two incidents. Deplorable actions by the officer. And I have one question is, what escalated the event to where he had to ask her out of the car? When I was reading into it, it seemed like there was an altercation about a cigarette or something like that.
No, what it was she picked up her cell phone and began to record it. And that was the point at which he went crazy.
Okay. Well, I thought I had read or heard from other officers that on a website that I'm on that she started lighting a cigarette.
She was already smoking the cigarette, and he told her to put the cigarette up.
He asked her to put her out, and then he asked her out because of that. That's what I heard.
Well, but if you watch the video, and listen to everything that's being said, she has, in my opinion, I've been through this three times now. She's already smoking. She turns on her cell phone, and that's when he starts escalating like crazy. But he doesn't reference the cell phone until they get out of the car, and she's carrying the cell phone with her, and we played it just a few minutes ago, and he's yelling at her to put it down. And the Supreme Court has clearly said you have the right to record anything that involves a public servant.
But see, we have to be careful with what Supreme Court and current precedent state versus what law enforcement officers can articulate as I did X for my personal safety. So we always forget the part of, you have certain rights.
So, Rennell, you're making the argument that, as a former police officer, you're making the argument that this officer felt that his safety was threatened because she was videotaping him?
No, I'm making the argument that overall, minus the situation, we like to shift to I have rights to do X.
Right.
And
what's wrong with that? I thought that was the all-American way.
But that's not where it stops. You have to take into account your rights. So police officers is the only entity in America that has the right, no pun intended, to take away your rights. So, yes, we all have inalienable rights to do A, B, and C, but our peace officers can temporarily and consequently permanently take away all right.
You know, you're right. And in fact, the other thing that the Supreme Court said is if a police officer tells you to do something, go ahead and do it. And if the officer is wrong, you can sue them later.
Exactly.
But don't fight them at the time.
Right, because you're going to lose that battle. You're going to lose the right battle on the street. There is no doubt in my mind, even responding to calls to assist other officers later to learn that he was wrong and he violated the rights initially. When I'm responding not based on court precedent. I'm responding based on our rules and procedure for the department.
Right.
So we just need to be careful on you know.
So you're saying that the police department you worked at had a procedure that if somebody was legally videotaping you, you could drag them out of the car, threaten them with a taser, and handcuff them and take them to jail?
Come on, Tom. That's no.
Is that not what happened, Rennell?
Well, I don't know exactly what he thought in his mind or saw in his mind, because I don't see everything in the video from the point she exited the
car. She had no weapon. She had a cigarette and a cell phone.
Right. I can't. I'm not avoiding the question. I'm just saying, for me to pull someone out of the car, I would have to have some type of articulable suspicion or reasonable suspicion.
Damn right.
Or something along
this is where, you know, last night we were talking about this on my TV show, and I think it was Joe Madison made the point, or maybe it was Kimon Freeman, that in the future, when people sue police departments for things like this, for having their rights violated, that, you know, typically what happens is the city or the county or even the state will pay the settlement. These settlements should come out of the pay of the cops and out of the budget of the local police department. Rennell, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Republicans love to talk about people having skin in the game, how even people on welfare should be paying taxes. Well, maybe some police officers should have some skin in the game here. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A whole bunch of other interesting stuff in the news here from new pot news. Did you know marijuana can actually help heal broken bones? To worm news. Yeah, we'll get into that eventually. This guy, and then this white guy with an AR-15 shows up to yell at black protesters at a Confederate statue. Really? And then there's Quinnipiac University just came out with a new poll. And what I heard this morning on MSNBC, on the Fox News version of MSNBC, which is called the Morning Joe Show, was a whole riff about how this new poll from Quinnipiac University says that Hillary Clinton loses against Rubio, Bush, or Walker in Iowa and Colorado and Virginia. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, that's interesting, and that she has a fairly high level of untrustworthiness, according to Colorado voters. 62% say not trustworthy. I think all that'll change as the campaign starts moving forward. Republicans have been getting mind-boggling amounts of publicity, mostly victim kind of publicity right now. You know, Donald Trump is picking on them, but the thing that I didn't learn this morning on the Fox News part of MSNBC on the Morning Joe Show was the third paragraph of the Quinnipiac University poll's press release, which I have in front of me now. In several matchups in Iowa, Colorado, another Democratic contender, U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, runs as well as or better than Clinton against Rubio, Bush, and Walker. Vice President Joe Biden does not do as well. So why was the headline not, you know, Bernie Sanders might be able to beat Republicans more easily than Hillary Clinton? I don't know. Anyhow, for this hour, I really wanted to talk about Sandra Bland and Kelly in Chicago. Kelly, you wanted to weigh in on the issue. Hey, Kelly, what's up?
Oh, hey, Tom. I just wanted to say I watched MSNBC last night, and there was a judge and a prosecutor on there, and they were reviewing the video. And the judge had went through it and basically stated that up until the point Ms. Bland was asked to come up out of that vehicle, there was no reason for him to even go any further. He could have just gave her the ticket and kept going. And he was supposed to rise above, you know, the situation rather than engaging with her. So once, no matter what, like the judge said, he asked her two questions and she gave him two answers. It may have not been the answers he wanted to hear. The way she said it, there was still no reason for him to escalate it,
right.
Period. And it ends there. You know, and that was the catalyst for her death. And going forward, anytime a police officer is behind you, everyone gets nervous. So if what she stated, hey, I was moving over for you, he made her nervous. She just pulled over thinking that he's going to pass her, but instead he gets behind her. Then he tells her, okay, you didn't turn your signal on. That was just a setup. period. Police officers know that the presence of their vehicle is going to cause you to be nervous. And when you're nervous, you do things that you wouldn't normally do, or maybe you will, as far as not turning on your signal to move over. But if the police behind you and they're trying to get past, we do it all the time. We just move over to the side. Great.
Right.
Don't nobody turn their signals on when the police or emergency vehicles behind you. You just move over. Nobody turns his signals on.
Right.
He set her up for that stop.
Yeah.
By being behind her.
Yeah, let us not forget. I don't know, and I'm guessing we will learn the history of Officer Brian Encinia, the fellow who went off on Sandra Bland. And I agree with you. I think it's totally off the wall. But let us not forget also that the guy that he works for, the sheriff, whose name I think was Gil Smith, if I'm remembering correctly, that sheriff had actually been fired from a previous job or put on lost pay, put on disciplinary leave without pay from a previous job for, quote, racism. And we don't yet know the details of what provoked that, what that means, what that meant, but it was apparently pretty bad. And then he was court ordered to take anger management courses. This is the boss, right? The sheriff, who was not present at the time, but you know, as Ben Franklin said, you know, a fish rots from the head down. In other words, whoever's in charge sets the tone for the department, and that raises a lot of flags for me too. So.
And I just really want to say this as well, Tom, is that police officers claim that they don't see race, but we see race every single day.
Of course.
And he could have let that woman kept going. But yep. Had she been a white woman, he wouldn't have said a word. And then I hear a lot of people saying, oh, well, I would have just shut up and not said a word. Irregardless of what, as a black woman, you know when you're being mistreated for your race.
Right.
Because that was too simple. Well, he could have just let her go or not even stop a period. But because she was black, it was in his innate nature to just want to harass her.
Yep.
And people in authority, they need to stop doing that because you have a badge. You are not authority over me. You know, until I do something wrong, then you have authority. But if I'm not doing anything wrong, you are not my authority. And I'm a grown woman, just like you're a grown man. Respect me like I would have to respect you. And they don't respect somebody just because they have a badge and they have a gun and they can do and say whatever they want to do and say, and they need to stop that.
Yep. I very well said, Kelly. Thank you. Totally with you. Thank you. Mark, in American Canyon, I got to change my software here. I can't quite see the rest. Oh, California. American Canyon, California. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Good morning, Tom, or I guess it's afternoon on the East Coast, and it's such a pleasure to talk to you. Love you for what you do. And
thank you.
I'm just really, really, I'm sorry. I don't even have anything positive to add to your show, and I'm just fed up, Tom. It just breaks my heart. It just keeps happening over and over again. And it's been going on. And I don't know what to do. I don't own a gun. I served in the military. I'm just stressed out because of this situation. And it's just every time you turn on the TV or turn on the radio, somebody unarmed and black is being treated very badly.
But Mark, I would submit that this has always been the case. I think that this is one of the, you know, for example, Bernie's been talking about, you know, for the last few decades. No, I this is the last few centuries. This is the last four centuries, and I believe, and maybe I'm wrong. And you, I believe you're. Yeah, you didn't say, but I think that Danielle noted. Are you African American, Mark?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so
and
would you not agree that this has been going on forever? It's just that the rest of the country is now seeing it because people have dash cams and cell phones?
I couldn't agree with you more, and I've experienced it myself personally. I grew up in Los Angeles, and by far one of the worst police forces as far as racially attacking people that I ever came across. I live in the Bay Area now, and it's not nearly as bad as what I'm seeing every day. But, you know, this was the woman.
Yeah.
And she answered all his questions. She complied with them until he came up with this ridiculous notion put out your cigarette.
So let me speak to your saying that you're depressed by this or upset about it. I think we're all righteously furious that this happened and that we could see it. But it seems to me like a good thing that white people in America who for centuries, or certainly, you know, throughout my lifetime, let's say for the last six decades, have by and large, you know, I'm guessing probably 80% of white people go through their lives without any meaningful interaction with black people. And that white people now, as a result of these bystander videos, the fact that everybody's got now a high quality camera in their cell phone, and that police departments are starting to put these dash cams on, that white people who had no idea, for you know, and that's all, that opens a whole new discussion about how our media sucks. But in any case, white people had no idea that this is what average life is like for black people are starting to figure it out and get it. And I think that, you know, the large participation and support in the Black Lives Matter movement of well-intentioned white people, I see that as a good sign. Do you disagree with me, Mark?
No, I don't disagree with you. But if you do look at comments on YouTube or some of these other things, even though we're both looking at the same video, all of us looking at the same video, people still see it the same way. And I read a column by gentleman Wing in the Huffington Post, and even his comments seem to be spewed against her being rude to the police officer.
Well, that's not a crime.
I did not get that. I did not get where she was rude.
Yeah.
I mean, he asked her to put the cigarette out, and it was like, why?
Right.
I would have said the same thing. Why? And that's being rude?
Yeah. Yeah, I and my sense of it, as I said to the former cop who called in earlier, is that I think that when he went ballistic, it was when he realized he was being videotaped. And I want to know where her camera is, where her cell phone is.
Yeah,
if she was connected to the cloud, I mean, it might be that we can get whatever she recorded, or her family can get whatever she recorded, without, you know, if the police department has already destroyed the phone even. But where is her cell phone? And where is that recording that is on her cell phone that's, you know, it's clearly going on? I mean, she's talking to the phone as she's walking behind the police car. Mark, thanks a lot for the call. And thanks for listening to TuneIn Radio. 15 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program. We'll be back with more of your calls on this and other topics of the day. It's anything goes summer after all, but this is a big one. And we've got to do something about this in this country.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Wake Up America Day here. Should be year, century, whatever. We'll be back. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. And Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I watched a video last night. In my opinion, that police officer was pushing toward an escalation right from the get-go. When I got stopped by a cop, he'd say, remain in your vehicle, license, registration. Then he'd go back to his car and write out the ticket or check to see if he had any other outstanding warrants.
Right.
Then he'd come back to the car, hand you your ticket, and tell you what time you had to show in court, what date and time. And that was the end of the stop.
Right.
Why does he have to ask her, are you upset? Well, of course she's upset. Everybody whose day is interrupted by somebody is upset.
Yeah.
Well, why do you have to stand
and see,
there?
I think that question, that's the clue to me that she's videotaping the thing and he's figured it out. That, you know, and he's starting out by saying something like, you know, okay, I can be a nice guy. What's the problem here? And then he just, you know, his temper gets the better of him and he goes nuts. And this is white supremacy. I mean,
yes, it is. You had the key. You spouted out the key in your very first line. They're not paying these guys enough, so you don't get the quality people.
I think that's part of it, but I think that we're also not holding them accountable. You know, and cops know that even if they do something that the department gets sued for, The cop's probably going to keep his job. The police unions are very, very strong. And I never thought I would be in a position where I'm disagreeing with unions. But, some of these police unions are as corrupt as the police departments that, you know, their offices are on. And the county pays, you know, and in some cases, millions of dollars. Look at Eric Garner. It's, what, $5 million, something like that, $3.5 million? And
well, that's where we're going to disagree. It has nothing to do with the union being strong. See, the people don't understand.
No, but what I'm saying is that part of that settlement, part of that settlement money, Corky, should be coming out of the hide of that cop and that department rather than just having the county raise their property taxes.
Right. But my position is if you pay the police enough, you're going to get quality people. Once you're in the union has has a responsibility to protect you at all costs.
Right.
That's why they have a probationary period where the company or the city gets 30 days to look you over, to check your background, your school record, whatever you've done as a child and all that. And they can fire you without the union saying a word for the first 30 days. You get that. That's what the union gives you. Now, once you're in, it doesn't matter what the union employee does. The union has an obligation and a responsibility as it would a lawyer, if you paid a lawyer to protect you.
Yeah, you're right, Corky. You're right. What we have is a corrupt system, and therefore unions operating within that system are going to be affected by that corruption as well. How's that?
Yes.
Okay. Corky, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. John in Houston, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Sirius XM. Hey, John, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
I've been getting bits and pieces. I've been on the road on the Sandra Bland case, and I just heard a lady talking earlier, and I didn't realize that the cop came up behind her real fast.
Yeah.
But in Texas, that's a ploy they use. If they come up behind you real fast, no emergency lights, they just coming up real fast. And when you move over without signaling, that's the probable cause. I live in Houston, and right outside of Beaumont, Jefferson County, they have a drug task force. And I see this all the time on I-10. They come up behind you real fast, and when you move over without signaling, they stop you. Next thing you know, all your luggage is on the side of the road, and they're doing a full search of your car. You know,
So this is the excuse that they use to do basically drug searches or harassment.
Right. That's it. Like I say, that's the probable cause. You change lanes without signaling,
right?
And that gives them probable cause to stop you.
Yeah, amazing.
So, I've got stopped. I mean, I drive a truck. I haven't got stopped. If you're giving me a warning, then once you go back and you check my license and there's no warrants and you're going to give me a warning, then well, it's just come back up, give me my warning, let me go.
Right.
I mean, to start a whole nother conversation about my attitude and telling me if I'm a cigarette,
I think this guy had a chip on his shoulder, you know? I think this is another dimension. I talked a lot about white privilege. I think this is basically white supremacy. This is, you know, which is a cancer in this society that needs to be stomped out.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. John, thanks a lot for the call. Terrell in Denver. Hey, Terrell, what's up?
How's it going? We really have to stop talking about pay here when it comes to that. When I was in the military, as an MP, we got paid far less than what these police officers get paid, and somehow we knew how to act. Why? Because we had the UCMJ. anything you did wrong, you are held to the maximum accountability. Right. What we have is a lack of accountability. And the new racism is saying that and see absolutely nothing wrong with it. But you would never allow your family to be doing that. That's the new racism. It's playing like you don't understand and having no empathy for the people based on who's in the instance. I mean, I'm sorry. The police do have a right to rendition you off the streets, take you all the way to jail, and let you go on Monday and not charge you with anything.
Right.
They can do that. So you want to know how they got that power, Tom? They said, the constitutionally mandated thing in the first place, the case with the court, then they got new powers. There's no accountability. None. Whatsoever.
So you're saying, you know, quit talking about the pay. We've got soldiers who are getting shot at for a hell of a lot less money than most police officers. Although I'd say those soldiers are getting room and board and all, you know, free medical and everything else. But without debating the pay, you're saying the problem is accountability. I don't disagree. I think you're right, Terrell. I think you're absolutely right. And yeah, good point. Thank you very much for calling and making it. Rudy in Atlanta. Hey, Rudy, what's up? Rudy, you're on the air. Okay, Rudy's on line two, Danielle, if you want to check him out. William in Concord, North Carolina. Hey, William, what's on your mind?
Yes, I wanted to call in and talk about the police officer who called in before, mm-hmm. Defending the other officer.
Right.
With the case, it is a simple profile. This has been going on for years. This has been going on for the last 40, 50 years. You pull someone over, okay, for no reason, and then you go look and see if you can find a reason and say, okay, they're guilty of this. The same thing they did in Baltimore with Freddie Gray.
Yep.
Basically, he had a knife in his pocket. You didn't know he had a knife in his pocket. Sandra Bland.
And by the way, it was not an illegal knife, for the record.
Exactly. So then you go ahead and say, well, this is how it's supposed to be. They did something wrong. And being that we're culturally conditioned, that person of color is synonymous with being something wrong. So the associate memory comes into effect. Well, okay, they must be doing something wrong. But if you have the intellect to truly understand it, then you say, well, she did nothing wrong. You pulled her over and you tried to justify it. Anybody who's black, who's 30s or older, this has been the case and something you had to dodge and deal with throughout your, you know, throughout your life. Okay. And this is a constant effort. As you said, it's white supremacy in a sense, okay, where how dare you question me? You better go ahead and go along with what I'm saying right here along these lines. And they're not held accountable. If they were held accountable, just like you would be in a certain job, you'd be fired or financially be held accountable, okay, then it would change. It wouldn't wipe it out totally, but it would bring down the numbers. But being that that's not the case, okay, they're allowed to run free. And then we make excuses. Well, she was talking loud. You could do what you want. You could be able to curse out a cop.
Yeah.
Okay? They should have the discernment, okay, to de-escalate a situation, okay, and explain to the person. Because most cops, they talk to you like your children. You're talking to grown adults. But people don't talk that way to their kids.
Yeah.
Okay? So I think from that perspective, it would be beneficial if we have to understand that this is a culturally conditioned. We are conditioned over and over that is synonymous with people being of color, that you're not equal or you're a criminal of something along those lines.
Right.
So people are unaware, even though they'll say, well, Tom, that I don't have any biases. Okay, if you understand psychology, you know you can, this conscious and subconscious mind or unconscious mind, where your actions are controlled because you've been trained to act that way.
Yeah.
So if you're unaware of it, how can you even stop it or make a suggestion like, hey, I know I'm doing this, so let me reflect on it. I see yourself, you being very conscious yourself, listening to yourself where you say, hey, that may be white supremacy, or I may be thinking about something from a different perspective.
Right.
But most people don't see it that way.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I keep saying I'm just learning a lot of this stuff myself, you know, just as... Well, I'll leave it at that. William, thank you for the call. You nailed it. We'll be right back. Stop of the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting piece by William Boardman, originally published over at Reader Supported News. It's been reprinted over at Alternate. Why, the headline, why is the New York Times basically doing a blackout on Bernie Sanders? The subhead, the New York Times-Sanders coverage is intellectually dishonest. This is essentially the same thing I was wondering this morning watching MSNBC and hearing that Hillary's not doing all that well against some of her Republican rivals when the Quinnipiac University poll, the third paragraph, the third sentence of it says, in several matchups in Iowa and Colorado, another Democratic contender, U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, runs as well as or better than Clinton against Rubio, Bush, and Walker. Vice President Biden does not do as well. And yet that was never mentioned, to the best of my knowledge. I mean, maybe it was mentioned and I had gone to the bathroom or something. This is not a blanket indictment of MSNBC, but, you know, and Louise and I were going through news stories and whatnot. But, you know, I tend to, when Bernie's name is mentioned, I tend to notice it. And I had no idea that Quinnipiac University said, you know, hey, Bernie in Colorado and Iowa, Bernie's doing better than Hillary against Rubio and Walker and Bush. Now the numbers are all within the margin of error, so I'm not sure that that's like screaming headline. But if you're going to talk about Hillary, then you should be talking about Bernie too. Shouldn't you? Or is this how the establishment takes down people who are outsiders? I have, and we're going to continue talking about Sandra Bland as well. For those of you who are on the phone about that topic, you know, hang around, and I'm going to pick up your calls in just a minute. But I just wanted to get this off my chest. The thing that I have learned living in this town in Washington, D.C. for the last 5 years is that it's not about whether you're left or right. It's not about whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. Those things actually don't matter that much. It's whether you're an insider or an outsider. And people in the media, by and large in this town, are insiders, at least the big corporate media. They are absolutely insiders. And when they start behaving like outsiders, think Cenk Uygur and MSNBC, when they start behaving like outsiders and they start talking about the stories that make the insiders uncomfortable, things like lousy free trade deals, for example, then they get dismissed. See you later, buddy. And Senator Sanders has always kind of gone his own way. I mean, he's an outsider. He's not even a member of the Democratic Party. I mean, he might have joined now since he's running for president someplace somehow. And I know he ran in the Democratic primaries twice in his last two races in Vermont as a Democrat and won and then said, OK, that's fine, but I'm going to run for office in the general election as an independent. So, you know, Bernie is an outsider. And so, gee, what a surprise. The New York Times, the ultimate insider publication, would ignore him. William Boardman writes, the front page story is about, he's talking about the New York Times, is about such issues as workforce anxiety, shrinking middle class, stagnant wages, and the growing income gap at pre-depression levels. The candidate who's been raising these issues louder and longer than any others is Bernie Sanders, yet the New York Times story about these issues does not even mention Bernie Sanders, although it does mention two different Republicans and Hillary Clinton. This is the article titled Growth in the Gig Economy Fuels Workforce Anxieties back on July 13 that he's talking about. But it's just one of many, many examples. It's the insiders versus the outsiders. It isn't even really in this town in Washington, D.C., it isn't even really that much about race. It's about insider versus outsider. Now, on the roads of Texas, clearly, and pretty much everywhere else in America, well, and in Washington, D.C. as well, you know, when you're encountering police and things, there are huge issues of race. And white supremacy, this Joe Madison was on my TV show last night, and he gave at the end of our the segment that we did with him and Kimon Freeman and Hillary Shelton of the NAACP, and Kimon is with We Act Radio, which carries this program, and also with Black Lives Matter. Joe gave one of the most impassioned. I wish I had a clip of it right now. The clips don't get cut up and won't go up for another hour or two. Over on that website, on that YouTube channel. But basically saying, you know, the problem here is that white people have been conditioned by white supremacy, and it's never referred to on using those words, at least in the white media, in the quote mainstream media. And so have many black people been conditioned by white supremacy. And I don't even want to pretend to be channeling, for lack of a better word, the brilliant and great Joe Madison. But it was like, for me, it was that was one of the most remarkable speaking truth to power moments in the program, I thought, and for me in a long time. It's this issue that nobody talks about. I mean, it's hard enough to get white people to talk about white privilege, and you've still got Bill O'Reilly and the entire Fox News, Fox so-called news, the official voice of the Confederate States of America network, proclaiming that there's no such thing as white privilege. Try having a conversation with them about white supremacy. You know, they will just bang, stop you in your tracks. But it's a conversation we need to have in this country. We need to change fundamentally our culture. Kimon gave a brilliant comment about, you know, here are the structural things that we need to change. We need to start holding police accountable. I need to go back and watch it because he write down his list because it was, or get him back on the program here. Because it was just an absolutely brilliant list. And there is a cultural piece to this. I remember, you know, my first aha on this was back in probably 1966. As a teenager, listening to, as a white teenager living in a white neighborhood, going to a white school, listening to Dick Gregory's double album, The Light Side, The Dark Side. And it was like, it totally blew my mind. It was like somebody had just like opened the door and said, hey, there's another world over here. And in fact, that's, you know, I've told this story before, that's how I got fired. The one time in my life I've been fired from a job was I was doing radio on WVIC in Lansing, Michigan. And they were doing the Drake format, and there was this rule in the Drake format that you couldn't play two black artists back to back, and you couldn't play two women back to back because it would quote create a sound. And one night I was on the air, and I played two black women back to back. And Bob, the guy who was the station manager, called me up and started screaming at me. And so I just started playing black women back to back, and he's calling up and yelling, and we're pushing midnight. And so Finally, I thought, okay, you know, I'm getting fired. What the hell? And I put Dick Gregory's album on, and I played that for the rest of the night. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, the engineer came in, and he says, you know, I'm supposed to remove you from the building, because I quit answering the phone. And I said, you know, that's fine. I'm not going to pick a fight with you. You know, the guy was a good friend of mine. We were both ham radio operators. And I said, do you really want to do that? And he was like, nah. And he pulled a bag of pot out of his pocket. He says, let's get high. So we did that instead.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
But I'm telling you, white people in this country are clueless, by and large. We'll be back. We'll pick up your calls right after this. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And Ed, watching Free Speech TV in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Tom, about a year or two ago, when a report came out that said police departments around the country were using IQ tests and Minnesota multiphasic personality inventories to screen out people that had high IQ or had empathy, I was very alarmed, and I tried waving my arms and going, pay attention, America. This, you know, the police departments are selecting thugs that have personality traits of psychopaths to be your police. Do not be surprised if they act like thuggish psychopaths, because that is what you asked them. That's what you asked for.
Right. And I remember when that story came out about, what, 2 years ago or thereabouts? But I thought it was just like...
Yeah.
I thought it was just some, one isolated police department. Are you saying that this is...
No. This is all across America they're doing this.
Using MMPIs and Stanford Binets or whatever, whichever IQ test they're using, to make sure that they don't get people who have empathy or a high IQ?
Yes, exactly so. And you study enough psychology to know that people with a low IQ... normally use violence to resolve their issues because they can't think their way through.
Well, it depends on the person. It depends on their temperament. It depends on the situation.
The lower the IQ, the more prone they are to use violence.
I'm not sure you can. I'm not sure you can make that as a positive assertion. There's a lot of people, for example, with profoundly low IQs, people with Down syndrome. I've known a few throughout my life who are some of the most nonviolent people you'll ever meet. But they have a very low IQ.
I'm certain below a certain level, they learn to keep their mouth shut and smile.
I think temperament is something that we underestimate, Ed. I didn't believe this as strongly before I was a parent, but I've seen three kids now, and my own three, and I mean literally the way they were in the womb. You know, one was, you know, kicking and punching constantly throughout the pregnancy and still is. And another was very, very quiet throughout the pregnancy and still is. I think that temperament is actually a big deal. And I don't know if an MMPI does a good job of measuring temperament or not. It probably does. It's probably one of the dimensions that are measured. But
I've heard you say before that like one third of the police would pay you if they get to carry a gun and a knife or a badge and a gun
and a club and beat people up. Yeah, that was a comment that was made to me by a former police chief, a small town police chief.
Well, instead of using the MMPI to find those people and eliminate them, they're using the MMPI to find those people and put them on the force.
Yeah. If you can find a source for that, Ed, I would like to revisit that.
That the article that came out 2 years ago said that it was out across the country. It wasn't one isolated
department. No, I remember. I remembered it as being a local story rather than a national story. But I remember when the story came out. I'm just wondering, has it been debunked? I mean, that would be a scandal. I think that would be just a huge, huge story if that was.
I talked to Mike Papantonio about this because he stood in for you one day on the show.
Right.
And he said, yeah, it is a problem, but and the town would be liable, but it's hard to use the MMPI because people in juries are just not smart enough to understand what it means.
Yikes. Okay. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. If anybody has a link to those stories, we'll look for them. But feel free to tweet it to us or drop in the chat room and post the link. Minutes past the hour, the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program, a phrase, by the way, that I stole from Bernie Sanders about 10 years ago. Because he says that and people go, oh, Hartman says that. No. I stole it from him. Carrie in Pipe Creek, Texas. Hey, Carrie, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. You were talking about Sandra Bland and what happened. I live in Texas. And a few years ago, I was riding with this lady. We were going to a meeting, and she's in her 40s. She's a typical soccer mom type, clean cut, everything. And
white woman.
She was speeding, and the cop got her and pulled her over. And this woman was speeding over like 15 miles the speed limit on a highway and did not have an updated insurance form in her car. And her safety sticker was outdated by I don't know how long, and she let her go. And I was sitting in the car.
She was a white woman?
I wanted to give her a ticket. But it just goes to show, you know, how people react to what they see. And that's what he saw, and she was able to talk her way out of it, and he let her go. But can you imagine if he had been, if she had been black or a man, or, you know, what would have happened in that case?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention that incident that happened here in Texas. And I also wanted to mention I was at a gathering, a social gathering, and a young man who was he was a county sheriff, and he was young, and he'd been drinking. And I know he was just talking off the top of his head, but he was saying that if people gave him a hard time, that there are places that he can take them, and they wouldn't be found. So I know he was, you know, had a few beers, and he was just saying this. And his mother was there, and she talked to him and kind of talked him down from that. But,
yeah,
you know, those, that happens here in Texas all the time, and it's continuing. And I don't know.
It's, yeah, you give people the power of life or death, and for some people don't know how to handle that power, and it just goes to their heads. Carrie, thank you for sharing that story, and thanks for the call. Richard, driving through Illinois, listening on Sirius XM. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
Good.
You know, I got two quick things I want to bring up. One, just before I called, I did a Google search, put in the term police erase cell phone video, and I got page after page after page of incidences where the police have been accused of taking people's cell phones after the people have been recording, like, police interactions.
Right.
And the, literally going through people's phones and destroying any evidence of what just happened. And if it wasn't for a lot of, like, these phones going to cloud storage, you know, the record of what happened would be completely lost.
Right. Right.
You know, and that's evidence tampering. That's against the law. If
should
we
be.
Did it, we'd go to jail.
Yeah.
They do it as a matter of habit so that they don't get caught. And the other point is, you know, police departments all over the country train their officers that if you give someone an order, you tell them to do something and they don't comply, you force them to comply, whatever it takes. And this is the way they're trained. It's, you know, the mentality that they're a public servant is not what they're trained, you know, to understand.
Right.
They're more trained to understand that you make people submit to your demands regardless of what it takes, because in the end, you're not going to be prosecuted for it. You're not going to face any retribution for your actions because you're a cop.
Right. And even if the town has to pay, in the Eric Garner's a great case, you know, millions of dollars to the family, you, the cop who committed the crime, nothing's going to come out of your hide. Nothing's going to come out of your paycheck.
Well, also, did you see the settlement that the city of New York did over the Occupy situation? There was a commanding officer that was involved in an altercation at the Occupy thing in New York City that wound up, he was found in violation of all kind of police policies, and in the end he lost 5 vacation days and was reassigned from his detail in New York City out to like Staten Island or something, where he actually lived in like the cushy part of town where he wanted to go anyway. So he's rewarded for what he did.
Yeah.
City still had to pay people.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we should at the very least, I mean, there's so many changes that need to be made, that need to be done. But you know, a starting one is one of these things that Kimon Freeman suggested last night is you know, let's have the cops have some skin in the game. Let's, you know, if a police officer does something that leads to a lawsuit that the city loses, you know, let's take a piece of that out of that officer's pay, or allow people to sue police officers individually. for breaking the law. You know, take away the sovereign immunity or whatever the doctrine is. Shana would know it better than me. Whatever the legal doctrine is that protects agents of the government, if they are committing crimes. I mean, if somebody's committed a crime, they should not be worthy of that protection. I mean, this is how I feel about George W. Bush and murder in Iraq. I mean, this is the whole argument that Vince Bugliosi made. But yeah. And cops taking people's phones. I totally agree with you, Richard. That is evidence tampering. And I want to know where Sandra Bland's phone is. Where is that phone? What's on that phone? And you know, does her family have it? Do the police have it? Have they tampered with that evidence? Richard, thank you for the call. Thank you very much. And thanks for listening to Sirius. We'll be right back. It is 28 minutes past the hour. News coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back right after that with more of your calls here on Anything Goes Summer on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
So, white guy with AR-15 shows up where black protesters are protesting Confederate statue. The police come and say, Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Well, it turns out Michael Moore first exposed this. Back when he was doing a TV show, this was in the late 90s, titled The Awful Truth. It was an 8-minute segment on Michael Moore's show in which he talked about the Wunderlich, as Wonderlic, Wunderlich Cognitive Ability Test, the WCAT. It is a test that, and this is a piece written by Matt Agorist. I'm not sure what website it was published at, but the headline is U.S. Court Says It's Okay for Police Departments to Refuse to Hire Someone Who Is Too Smart, and it's from the Free Thought Project. And in fact, the headline says, ever wonder why cops yell quit resisting as they beat a person who's not resisting, or why they shoot people who pose no threat? Maybe the answer is right in front of us. So this Wunderlich Cognitive Ability Test is basically an IQ test, and many police forces across the United States require people to take it. According to ABC News, the standard range of scores, if you get a perfect score on this thing, you get a 50. Okay, so if you're like, you know, Einstein smart, you get a 50. The standard range of scores applied to police officers for police officers is a score between 20 and 27. The average score nationally, according to ABC News, the average score nationally for police officers is 21 to 22, the equivalent of an IQ of 104. In other words, pretty much right at average. 100 is the mean. Is the average. So back in 1996, a guy by the name of Robert Jordan, who was a smart fellow, along with 500 other applicants, underwent a screening process to become a police officer in Connecticut, which included the Wunderlich test. This was conducted by the Law Enforcement Council of Southeastern Connecticut, LEC. It was a coalition of 14 cities and towns to become a cop. And, you know, a few months later, he learned that the police were interviewing people who had taken the test, and he was not called in for the interview. So he called him up, and he said, why wasn't I called in for the interview? And they said, the city responded, I'm reading from the article, the city responded that it removed Jordan from consideration because he scored a 33 on the Wunderlich Cognitive Ability Test, and that to prevent frequent job turnover caused by hiring overqualified applicants, the city only interviewed candidates who scored between 20 and 27. That was their rationale. The city of New London claims that, quote, people within certain, and this would be intelligence ranges, achieve a degree of job satisfaction and are likely to be happy and therefore stay on the job. We hire dumb people to be police because they don't aspire to anything beyond that, basically, is what the city of New London was saying. Now, Jordan took this to court. He said, you know, this is a violation of my civil rights. This is discrimination against smart people. You can't do this. And the lower court said, yes, they can. And then on August 29th, 1999, he took this. That's when he lost it. So then he thought, Jordan, thinking this must just be a fluke ruling, They ruled against him, saying no suspect classification and that the defendants have shown a rational basis for the policy. In other words, the police departments are saying, hey, it's a rational thing to say we want dumb people to be police because they're less likely to try to, you know, to leave the job. You invest a lot of money in training a cop. So he appealed this to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. It's one step below the Supreme Court in 1999. And he presented evidence that there's no relationship between intelligence and job satisfaction. And that he's a smart guy who wanted to be a cop. And the court ruled that these 14 towns in Connecticut were still justified in refusing applicants with high IQs, quote, because it matters not whether the city's decision was correct so long as it was rational. They said because all the applicants who were smart were denied, there was no discrimination. Right. And, you know, going into the article, he says, maybe this is why, you know, we've watched in the sidelines as Mayberry was transformed to martial law. A smart person doesn't create a domestic standing army and call it freedom. A smart person does not deliberately tear gas journalists. A smart person does not point a rifle at an innocent person and tell them they're going to kill him. A smart person doesn't severely beat a person with Down syndrome because he sees a bulge in his pants, which is actually a colostomy bag. These were all actual cases. There's hot links to all these. A smart person does not continuously shoot at an unarmed man who poses zero threat and whose arms are in the air. And it goes on and on. So it was Michael Moore in 1999 or 2000 who exposed this. Police departments will not hire smart people. Jeez. Judy in Lewisburg, North Carolina. Hey, Judy, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi. On top of the fact that I've heard that same thing, too, about the testing and hiring people who don't score as high, and along with that, So many people are hired, and they're young. They don't have life experience. I mean, I just don't think that you should be hiring people that are 18, 19 years old with a few classes, quote, training, and send them out with such little life experience with guns on them making decisions when they just got out of high school.
Yeah. I forget which country it is. I think it's either Norway or Germany, and it's probably true of most of the Northern European countries. For the first 2 years that you're a police officer, you're not allowed to carry a weapon. So it's like,
well,
that would
make a lot more sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a probationary period. I think it speaks to what you're talking about. Of course, it's also much harder to become a police officer. And they actually go out of their way to hire smart people, whereas apparently here in the United States, if you're smart, that disqualifies you from being a police officer, which just blows my mind. Judy, thank you for the call. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Can you hear me, Tom?
I hear you just fine. You wanted to talk about the price of oil on Anything Goes Summer here?
I did, but now I'm really wrapped up into this, into the young lady being killed.
Yeah, Sandra Bland.
And Sandra Bland, yes. One thing I learned from your show last year around the summertime was that, say, for example, this police officer is found doing wrong as far as contributing to this lady's death, even though he isn't convicted, say, for example, he may lose his job, but he would still end up somewhere else in another department.
Right.
Working.
Well, that was the case with Darren Wilson, the guy, wasn't it? The guy who shot Mike Brown, hadn't he been fired from a previous job? Oh, there, maybe it was the Cleveland cop.
No, Tamir Rice.
Oh, the one who killed Tamir Rice. Right. That was
right.
It. Yeah.
Right. But my thing is this. You know, we have to come up with legislation, whether it's on the local level or the state level, that says people like this, they should be scrutinized as far as before they get the job,
yeah,
that either is put on television or in the newspapers, and let the public, don't let the police station decide. Let the public decide if this person is going to serve in your community that you would give the okay for it, or you could say no, and this would actually stop a lot of them in their tracks. They'd have to think twice because yesterday, just seeing this thing on film, it made me realize that everything was okay until she decided to answer his questions. He asked her a question as far as, you know, are you okay or you seem a little agitated? And that, by her answering him the way she did, so articulately, set him off.
Yeah.
Put him in a rage. And
well, I think he asked that question because that was when she started recording him, and I think he figured that out.
Right.
Second, I could be wrong, but
I got a question for you, Tom, and I'd like for you to find out. Say, for example, anyone is pulled over by the police and you think they have a video dash cam, would it be okay if you say, well, officer, I'm not going over to the side. I would rather stay in front of this car, in front of your car.
Yeah.
And you can pat me down.
You have to.
I don't want to be out of sight of the camera.
Right. It's not an unreasonable thing to say, Charles, but the law is that you have to do what the police officer tells you to do. If it's wrong that cop is telling you to do it, there are legal remedies that you can pursue later. Although typically they're useless because there are no witnesses or the police departments won't cooperate or people, you know, a lot of the people who are abused by police. In fact, I'd guess probably the vast majority of people who are abused by police are people who have few resources. It's one of the reasons why cops go after people of color. You know, they know that there's not going to be a consequence to them. The people don't have the money to hire a lawyer to sue them. So this which takes us back to white supremacy and institutional racism in this country. But yeah.
Right. Well, the thing is,
if I may, Charles, if I may interrupt for just a second, just because my memory is getting as I get older, you said the magic word, which was community. And this was another thing that Kimon Freeman said last night on my TV program. He said, you know, we need to get back to community policing where the people who are policing our communities live in our communities. And that's the sort of thing that could just be made as a federal law or a requirement or at the very least a guideline. Cops should come from the communities that they are policing. What do you think?
No, I think that's absolutely correct. You know that, but I guess in some situations you do allow for other people that don't live in your community to work there. But what I'm saying is, please, let's not get off the fact that if someone does have an incident like Mike Brown, if he wants to come into your community and work, whether it's on the local level or on the state level, like I said, that person should be scrutinized through the community as to whether they should get the job or not.
Yeah, the problem is the mechanism. How do you do that?
Well, the legislation.
No, I mean, how do you pull a community together and say, check out this cop?
Well, there's television and there's a newspaper. You know, and this guy has filled an application. He wants to work in our local department. Should he or should he not? And this is a particular record.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree with the sentiment. I can't figure out how that mechanism could be made to work, but it's an interesting suggestion. Charles, thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour, back with your calls in just a moment. Welcome back, 15 minutes before the hour. Glenn in Flint, Michigan. Hey, Glenn, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. What's on your mind?
Tom, I wanted to... This might not shed any light, but it might confirm what people have been saying about the police. I grew up in Flint. I became an EMT when I was 18 years old, so I was always working with the Flint Police Department. I went ahead while I was and got my degree in criminal justice and did my internship. All these Flint police knew me, so they would act as they always do. They wouldn't curtail anything because I would be a witness.
Right.
And I have seen them drag people out and just beat them half to death. I've been called up to their holding cells and witnessed a Flint police sergeant on top of a guy on his bunk with sapper gloves on, which are lead-lined leather gloves.
Hmm.
Beating him in the face, and when we got him to the hospital, his jaw was dislocated and all the teeth on that side of his mouth were knocked out.
Wow.
I've seen a lot of this stuff, and that was in the 70s, and things have gotten worse. I have ways of knowing things. I keep in contact with certain people, and things have just gotten worse.
Is it a matter of white cops, black citizens, or is
usually,
or are you just talking police in general?
it's usually white caps. There weren't many black caps in the 70s in Flint. There were some. But they would also, they wouldn't discriminate between black and white if the white person was obviously poor.
Yeah.
They would beat them as bad. I've seen them literally walk up to people and start shoving them like a bully until the people felt cornered and threw a punch, and then they would just beat them down.
Wow. Have you ever seen any police officers suffer consequences for doing that?
There were no consequences. News wouldn't even cover that kind of thing.
Huh.
And, you know, there were no lawsuits, and if there was a lawsuit, most of the time they'd lose, unless there was, you know, a million witnesses, and not literally, but, you know, you couldn't even get a suit into court.
Right.
You couldn't get anything into court. But these guys did this time and time again. I know of a case because I know someone that works for the state police that down in Detroit. And let me mention that
we're just about out of time.
I have credentials where cops don't tend to mess with me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not go to the city of Flint at all. And I will not go into the city of Detroit. They're so bad.
Wow. Okay. Glenn, thank you for sharing your story with us. That's intense stuff. Thank you very much. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. And Ellen Ratner is on the line with us. Hey, Ellen.
Well, I am just outside of the vice president's event. He is coming to California to talk about raising the minimum wage. Now, interesting, Janet Napolitano, who used to be the Homeland Security chief, now I believe is chancellor of UC schools, which is University of California Colleges and Universities, has announced just a few minutes ago that they are going to increase minimum wage at UC to $15 an hour. So
cool.
This is and LA announced it yesterday. So this is very big out here.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Okay. Also, today's theme, you know, sometimes there are themes, are incarceration. And the Black Caucus had a very long conference today on incarceration. They're against minimum sentencing because they say that that's not fair. They also want to expunge various people's records, particularly if they're young and not hugely violent. The NAACP said that people are treated very differently. Also, the United Negro College Fund spoke. And they said that there was a critical need for reforms, but also the role of education can play once people are in the criminal justice system. And they said, he actually said, sucked into the vortex of the criminal justice system. He also said that blacks are six times more likely than white males to be in the prison system. And he said we have to build a pipeline to college rather than a pipeline to prison.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. But now you have, of course, because of the mandatory sentencing and how unfair it's been in terms of the drug sentencing, now you have Republican members of Congress saying, well, these 12,000 people are supposed to be released or have their sentences reduced in a few months, but some of them need to be in prison, they're violent, et cetera. Well, but they haven't necessarily been convicted on that. And last time I looked, you were innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah. You would think.
You would absolutely think. Okay. Speaking of that as well, there is a new police chief in Ferguson, Missouri. He was a commander with the Glendale, Arizona Police Force, and he's going to hold that position until a permanent chief is found. Now, also today, the president has met with some folks on the Ex-Im Bank, my friend Fred Hochberg is in charge of it. As you know, they defunded it basically, and now the Republicans are accusing Fred of slow walking, getting rid of the assets of the Ex-Im Bank. Well, there is no law that says how he has to get through them or get them and at what pace, et cetera.
There are 60 other countries that have banks that fund that offer loans to other countries so that they can buy the exports of the country where the bank is located, which is what the Export-Import Bank was. It was a way of encouraging exports from the United States. Why are Republicans opposed to encouraging exports out of the United States?
Well, what they're saying is that they only give it to big companies. But you know something? Because we were going to do a block company in South Sudan before all this recent stuff broke out. And so I actually saw Fred. I said, Fred, what is the smallest loan you'll do? He said $5,000, Ellen.
Wow.
So it's just not true.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that Boeing is probably the largest beneficiary of the
Boeing, but you know,
Ex-Im Bank,
but support small business owners.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just astonished that the Republicans would make this the mountain that they're going to, you know, stand on. It's just, moving along.
Okay.
You've also, we have a couple of minutes. South Sudan, Israel, and Iceland. You've got a couple of interesting things.
Yes. Okay. So South Sudan.
You've been in all three places, right?
I've been in all three places. South Sudan had a huge, large problem, has a huge, large problem because there's so much internal discord. The problem is that when there is this internal discord, China comes in, of course, because they can do things that we are not allowed to do in the United States of America with foreign entities. And secondly, but more importantly, ISIS, ISIL, and other terrorist groups can come in when there is not an accurate government. So that's number one. Then I went to Ireland, where I asked a lot of people about the gay rights vote that was held, and they said the same thing that Boston said in 2003, 2004. Hey, the Catholic Church came out against it. Look what they did with some of their folks in terms of, priest crisis, et cetera. And so how do they have the moral standing to tell us what to do?
Right.
And thirdly, Israel has changed dramatically since I was there 10 years ago. Very honestly, people are not, unless you're ultra-Orthodox, you don't like the settlements. However, they are very, I was there when the Iran agreement was agreed upon. Most people don't like it. And of course, one of the right-wing groups said, hey, how come we're giving more money to Israel if Israel is going to be so safe? That is actually an interesting question. But I will tell you this, Israel is counting on the younger people in Iran to have the same view that they do. And Israel is honestly a very changed place from when I saw it 10 years ago.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And I was quite shocked because you wouldn't. And the people that vote for Netanyahu are very much the ultra-Orthodox, the Orthodox. And most people do not think much of Netanyahu. In fact, one of my cousins, a person who is obviously not Orthodox, he was like fomenting at the mouth, fomenting, I guess is the word, at the mouth when he talked about Netanyahu. He was so angry about it.
Yeah. Well, he only got about a third of the vote, right? I mean, he had to put together a coalition government.
He was able to put together a coalition government, and that's why. And he really does not have the support of the people, and that was so clear. And that's why I think Israel is changing so much.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. What else is going on in the world?
Okay. Senator Hatch now weighed in on that famous Planned Parenthood video. It's amazing to me, even though this was heavily edited, how many Republicans are at least verbally buying into it and saying that it needs to change. It's hard to believe.
Well, they're trying to do, what they did to Acorn to Planned Parenthood. It's, it's the exact same thing. And at least the New York Times editorial page has called them out on it, which is a big deal. I mean, that should have been done.
I thought that was great.
Yeah, I agree. Ellen Ratner, the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Travis Geddes writing over at Raw Story. I just could read this straight up. Keep in mind, Sandra Bland ended up dead because she dared to talk back to a police officer who had pulled her over for changing lanes without turning on her turn signal. And in fact, I think even saying that she dared to talk back to him would be an exaggeration. I think it's because she started recording him with her camera. I have no proof of that, although when she got out of the car, she had her camera phone with her. She had her cell phone with her. And she was, you know, looking at it and talking to it as if she was recording it. And the police officer kept saying, and what's his name here? Brian Encinia kept saying, put down that phone, put down that phone. Actually, let's just, Jim, you've got that clip, right? Yeah, let's just play this thing. You can catch this for yourself. This is I want to know where this phone is.
I said, get out of the car.
Why am I being apprehended?
You I'm giving you all order. Door. You I'm going to drag you out of here.
So you're going to drag me out of my own car?
Get out of the car. Right.
And then you
I will light
me?
You up. Get out.
Wow.
Now.
Wow.
This is where get out of the car.
For a failure to signal. You're doing all of this for
get
a
get over there.
Right, yeah.
And she's
yeah,
carrying her phone.
Let's do
go ahead.
For a failure to signal. Yep, for a failure to signal.
Get off the phone.
Oh, let's go.
Get off the phone.
I'm not on the phone. I have a right
put
to record.
Put your phone
this
down.
My property.
This put your
my
phone
property.
Down.
Sir?
Put your phone down. Right now. Put your phone down.
So where is that phone? So that's what happens if you're black and female and you encounter a white police officer in Texas. Here's what happens if you're white and male and you encounter a police officer in Texas. Travis Geddes writing this thing. He says, a white man wearing shorts and flip-flops carried a loaded AR-15. Now, the AR-15, this is what the Newtown shooter used to kill all those little children. It is basically it's the civilian version of the what is it, the M1, the whatever it is. I'm not a gun, pistols I know something about, but these weapons of war I don't know. But it's a weapon of war. It's an AR-15. Okay, a white man wearing shorts and flip-flops carried a loaded AR-15 to confront a black man who was protesting a Confederate memorial in a Texas town. The 69-year-old black activist who has protested the memorial for at least 15 years. This is a memorial to the Confederacy. Said a younger man openly carrying a rifle confronted him as he spoke cordially with another resident who supported the Confederate memorial, which has been vandalized earlier this morning with graffiti that says this is racist. The younger man, who later identified himself as 22-year-old Stephen Passarello, strode up to Hudspeth and Adam Rinkloff while carrying the military-style rifle and shouted, "Counter-protest!" Hudspeth said Passarello made him nervous enough to call 911, so he calls a police officer. Hudspeth, who has lived in Denton since 1970, said he's protested at the memorial at least 50 times since 2000 when he began lobbying county commissioners to remove the statue. Police arrived shortly after that and told Passarello, white guy with loaded AR-15, who's counter-protesting the black guy who's protesting the Confederate Memorial, said he needed a sling for his weapon so it would be more difficult to steal. You are talking to a black guy, of course. Got to be careful. He might steal your gun. Passarello says, I was encouraged to open carry with a sling, although it wasn't required. I was told that I could stay, but they would appreciate it if I'd get my sling so people wouldn't feel so threatened. Right. He said he carried the loaded weapon to make a point, never intended to shoot Hudspeth, who he dismissed. This Hudspeth is the black guy who was protesting the Confederate Memorial, who he dismissed as ignorant of history. Right, the black guy is ignorant of the history of the South. He was like angry, and he was jostling the gun like this, Rinkloff said. He's talking about the white guy now. I don't know if he had the safety on. I don't know if the gun was going to go off at any moment. I would say he was pointing the muzzle toward people as he talked. I was worried. Screen captures circulating on social media appear to show Passarella making racist comments on Facebook. Get the effing lynching ropes out, Passarella said during a discussion of a black suspect and a white victim. I'm tired of this BS. At least one caller complained to police about the open carry protest, which drew five activists, but officers explained that their actions were legal under a recently signed Texas law. So, driving while black, in 3 days you're dead. Walking around with a loaded AR-15 and intimidating black people, police come and say, hey, you know, you really should put a sling on that thing because somebody might steal it. Right. Are we seeing what's going on here? Is white America starting to figure out what's going on here? You know, black people in this country have known for a long time, for as long as there have been black people in this country, have known what's going on here. But there's this incredible layer of insulation that is, you know, at the essence, the core of white privilege. And white supremacy, this doctrine of white supremacy, which was the basis for slavery. And now you've got, you know, Charles Murray, who co-authored The Bell Curve, which argues that blacks are genetically inferior to whites, was just cited a couple of weeks ago by Jeb Bush as a very smart man, or words to that effect. Really? I think Americans are starting to figure out what's going on here. White Americans. I hope so. You're allowed to terrorize as long as you're white. And I wonder what would happen. Remember back in the 60s, Bobby Seale shows up at the state capitol in California when Ronald Reagan is the governor with a bunch of Black Panthers, and they're carrying unloaded shotguns, but they're carrying shotguns, which was legal in California at the time. Into the state capitol building, or up to the state capitol building. And immediately, Governor Reagan, as soon as black people show up carrying unloaded shotguns, all of a sudden, Governor Reagan is all about passing gun control laws. And within a year, some of the strictest gun control laws in the United States were passed in California. Because, oh my God, black people are showing up with shotguns? I wonder what would happen if the Bobby Seals of today were to show up in Austin with unloaded shotguns. Or apparently you can walk around with a loaded AR-15, actually, in Texas, at least if you're white. This is, our country is at a real crossroads right now. And, you know, this is what Bernie Sanders said about this. He said, this video of the arrest of Sandra Bland shows totally outrageous police behavior. This is United States Senator Sanders, presidential candidate. No one should be yanked from her car, thrown to the ground, assaulted, and arrested for a minor traffic stop. The result is that 3 days later, she's dead in her jail cell. This video highlights once again why we need real police reform. People should not die for a minor traffic infraction. This type of police abuse has become an all too common occurrence for people of color, and it must stop. The only thing I'd add to that is that it has always been an all too common occurrence for people of color.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And it must stop. We'll be back with your calls right after this. Welcome back. Joe, watching Free Speech TV in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind today?
Well, Donald Trump and his outrageous remarks about John McCain.
Yeah.
Now, you can dismiss Trump as a buffoon and a self-promoter and whatnot. But John McCain, this goes back 57, 58 years. He's a child of nepotism. It's questionable whether he should have ever been accepted at Annapolis, and there's no doubt about his graduating status, 894 out of 899, should have relegated him to a platoon leader in the United States Marine Corps.
Right.
Off he goes to, if that, well, he, yeah, as a graduate, he'd have been on the Ollie North, like Ollie North, he'd been a platoon leader in the Marine Corps. Well, he gets off to flight school, and he crashes one or two airplanes. One is enough. You're washed out of any military flight program with the an accident that he had. I think he crashed two. I'm not exactly sure. Well, it goes back to his grandfather was an admiral. His father at that time in the late 50s was possibly an admiral, at least a captain.
Right.
Well, his father's running the 7th Fleet in Vietnam. When John McCain, he had crashed a plane earlier in Vietnam, and he had this time he went on his mission. It's questionable whether he went off mission when he crashed and was taken prisoner. His activities in the Hanoi Hilton are more than admirable. I mean, an honorable man. But I'd like to know how many people were sent out to find him and what happened in their search for him. Did people get killed? Did people get wounded? Did people get captured along with or after McCain, searching for McCain? We've never heard the stories on this.
Yeah.
Now I get cousins, I've got an uncle who was an admiral. McCain's father served under him in the Second World War, and I've got three cousins, direct cousins, who went to Annapolis. I had an appointment to Annapolis in 63. I wouldn't go. Ended up getting drafted in 1969 at 24 and a half years old. So I did a jolt in Vietnam, which is a terrible. As our country, we had no business there.
Yeah.
But John McCain's behavior, his big achievement at Annapolis, the thing that stood him out, was he had the most demerits in the history of Annapolis. His father, he succeeded his father. His father had held that distinction before.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was, and what gets me is 894 out of 899, he should have been the closest he should have ever gotten to a naval airplane.
How did, Joe, we're about out of time, but how is it that the Swift Boaters were able to take down John Kerry based on his Vietnam service? In 2008, when John McCain was running, there was nobody saying the things that you're saying.
He's never been scrutinized. I know far more than I talk.
Yeah.
My cousin Jim, he made an admiral at 43. He was the best pilot in the world in the 60s and 70s. He and I don't agree on much.
But you agree on John McCain. Joe? Yeah, okay, we've lost Joe. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in Reno. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. John Harbin here with you. Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Yes, I wanted to make the point that I certainly do agree with you. And as many people have noted, it's certainly the case that Americans should make note of their constitutional rights and their protections. And at the same time, recognizing that 2 o'clock in the morning on a dark street is not necessarily the place to argue the constitutionality of what an officer or officers may be doing to you. And that, it is in your best interest in many cases to defer to that authority, as much as it may be a misuse of authority and abuse of authority, that do not give them a reason.
Right. Conform now and litigate later.
Exactly. Exactly. And so and I understand, the indignation that people feel,
But to the best of my knowledge, looking at this video with Sandra Bland, she did exactly what he told her to do. It took him two or three times, yelling at her to get out of the car before she got out of the car. But she did it.
Right, and that is the case. Now, what officers will argue, and again, this has to do with policing culture, I would admonish people to look at the scholarship behind police culture. And when you look at it, there's a great deal of it, and it suggests that police tend to have a worldview that is very different than what we would expect, those of us who are not police. And that's one in which, you know, it's the police, we come first. We are a family. So the criminals are the enemy. And then the sort of average citizens, well, they're by and large kind of, you know, pain in the ass.
They're the civilians. They're the ones who populate the set that we act on, basically.
Exactly. And to that extent, as a number of people have pointed out, there's a socioeconomic dimension to that. In other words, I live here in the most affluent community in downtown Chicago. And the kind of policing that I'm going to get, should I make a call or should I be stopped for a traffic violation, is very different given the way I look, the car that I drive, and so forth. That resonates with police. They know full well the kind of people that have the local television stations in their Rolodex.
Right. You don't pull over a white guy who's driving a $50,000 car.
Right, exactly. Well, and to the extent that you do, you're very cognizant of the fact that he's probably able to respond in a fashion to any misuse of power, abuse of power on your part, as opposed to someone else. And he has a degree of credibility that someone living in an African-American, predominantly African-American housing project does not.
Right.
So, you know, I think that, you know, again, looking at policing the way that police regard the rest of us, the way that they regard criminals. And again, it's this sort of notion that I have authority. It's inculcated in them from the beginning that you've got to demonstrate that you're in charge of the situation. And that should that escalate, then you've got to come back with a response that is even more aggressive. And again, if someone should respond, your response then needs to escalate. It's always the case that you need to be in charge, and that at no point can anyone demonstrate to you that your authority is in question, which is, I think, exactly what happens here.
Right.
So I would argue that the young woman certainly was within her rights to challenge what the police officer was doing. But again, to all of us who would seek to engage in this sort of behavior, keep in mind what can happen, because you know you will get arrested at some point. And yes, down the road you may sue, you may be successful in filing a lawsuit, a complaint. You know, you may even get someone fired. But in the interim, you are going to spend the first several days in jail, possibly, while this is going on. And is that what you really want? So, again, I think that, you know, we all need to be so, you know.
Steve, this sounds to me like victim blaming here.
Yes, and that's absolutely the case. I think that we should not.
So shouldn't we be talking about, instead of telling people, hey, defer to the cops, you know, be deferential, particularly people who don't have money or resources to hold police accountable. Shouldn't we, instead of telling them, hey, you should have been nice to that cop, you should have done exactly what he said, shouldn't we be saying it's time to change police culture? I mean, you started this whole
thing out by
saying police culture is not what most people realize.
Exactly, and that's the point that a lot of activists...
So here's the question. How do we change police culture, Steve?
Oh, well, that's a question of public policy. You need to elect persons who are willing to change police departments at the federal policing in terms of those agencies to state to local policing and municipalities. And until you elect the mayor, say, for instance, here in a city like Chicago, who's going to bring in a police chief who's going to change police culture and policy and retraining and all of the things that come with it, you're not going to see change. But again, you know, that, you know, the old adage, you get the government that you deserve. You know, until we begin to elect people who are going to address policing issues. Unfortunately, I would argue that we are a bit schizophrenic in this country with regard to policing, because on the one hand, we are indignant about these kinds of situations. On the other hand, we have this perception in our minds that we do want police to be assertive and aggressive when it comes to a hypothetically
bad guy. Yeah. No, I got it. Steve, thanks for the call. I think that one of the most rapid ways that we could change police culture is to create oversight of police departments that is completely independent of the police or the prosecutor or the local judiciary, but that has actual power with regard to the police. Mark in Santa Ana, California. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good.
What I wanted to kind of bringing into the picture was the frame that the way that like black militants would look at cops. The way that black militants look at cops is they are soldiers, they're an occupying force, and that is exactly what I believe the police in the United States of America.
I don't think you have to be militant to look at cops that way, and I'm not even sure you have to be black.
But I mean, the frame, no, I don't either. But I think the frame is not out there that much. The police are no longer interested in preserving or in protecting and serving. They are, we're basically maintaining a force of killers.
No, it's occupy and oppress.
Willing to kill.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, ask any Occupy protester who are by and large white, you know, and they've started to figure out really quickly that the police are basically the stormtroopers for the establishment, you know, for the system. Especially after Jamie Dimon, I think it was, one of those big banksters gave, what, $5 million, or his bank gave $5 million to the New York City Police Union, the Benevolent Fund. And all of a sudden, they're coming down on Occupy Wall Street protesters, you know, with batons and tear gas and pepper spray and all kinds of, oh, man. Anyhow, Mark, thank you. I think you hit it right on the nail on the head there.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
So step by step, you know, we've got to keep talking about this, wake people up. And where is Sandra Bland's cell phone? Why is nobody asking? 28 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, fair and only slightly unbalanced, helping you win the water cooler wars. Oh, man, where are we going to go with this? By the way, over at Daily Kos, they got the dash cam footage of Officer Encinia, or however you say his name, Brian Encinia, coming up fast behind Sandra Bland, and you can see why she's pulling over. I would have pulled over too, and I might not have used my turn signal to do it. This is terrible stuff. Rama in Williamstown, Vermont. Hey, Rama, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you, Tom?
Good.
Hey, listen, two points I want to make, and you know, and the first one is certainly not anything original, but the big question, and I agree with you about we need to change the culture of our police. You know, we don't need to necessarily improve all of our behavior when we're confronted by a police officer. And I think a question that goes a long ways towards that could come from the population in general, especially those of us with some political empowerment, is when are the good cops going to start protecting us from the bad cops?
Yeah. Yeah, we had a call earlier from a fellow who worked with the Flint, Michigan Police Department, and he told the story about watching a police officer beat a guy so badly that it dislocated his jaw and all his teeth were gone. And he had to take him in as an EMT into the hospital. And I said, you know, did anybody report it? And he was like, no, of course not. And yeah. And I wanted to say, why didn't you report it? But I think I know the answer. He was probably frightened for his life.
Well, it's also you get into that closeness, that physical closeness. Why do you think they embedded reporters directly in with combat units? You know, it's
right. So they start thinking like soldiers and reporting like soldiers instead of like reporters.
Right, exactly. And you know, and they can't blame people necessarily, because that closeness develops out of a shared sense of circumstances. But I think if we clearly enunciate exactly what we mean by what we expect out of the police, which I don't think gets done often enough, especially not by our politicians who are elected to office, but we need to start asking and expecting, you know, if you're a good cop, why aren't you helping protect us from the bad cops? Why are the bad cops getting away with lying in courts? Why are the bad cops getting away with beating the crap out of people and you're not saying anything?
Yeah.
And I think that would start to help change the culture. And, you know, it's...
And that, Barama, goes to Kimon Freeman's suggestion of, and it's not original to him, but I mean, he made the argument really, really well last night on TV, that we need independent oversight of our police that is not this incestuous relationship that we have right now, my word, not his, that we have right now of the police department being overseen by the local prosecutor and the local grand jury, who depend on the police to do their job every single day.
Yeah, Yep. And just to throw in one of those nasty little anecdotes that I think will add up to a big pile of incriminating evidence against how some of the police do work. Years ago, I mean, we're talking many years ago when I was 18, 19 years old, military policeman down in Key West, Florida in the Army. And I was sound asleep.
You were an MP?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what
the first producer of my radio program was a military police officer. I'm impressed, Rob. Okay, continue your story. Pardon me.
My roommate comes in at about 2 in the morning, and he is just totally physically jazzed out, wakes me up, Rama, Rama, Rama. And I remember this quite vividly because of the impact it had on me. He was jazzed up because him and some city cops, he went out with some city cops to an issue involving some military at a bar and got to club somebody. And, you know, I mean, this really fired him up. He was excited about it. And as far as I know, he went on to become a police officer.
And he was all excited because he got to beat somebody up.
Yeah. So, you know, it's do people set out to do it that? I don't know. But, you know, when you get out there, and I'm sure part of it, look, he was young and impressionable like me. And I was just, you know, he just happened to be in the circumstance, I guess, where his first instance with being able to use violence, right. People encouraged it.
We human beings are so easily influenced by set and setting, to use Tim Leary's old phrase, by the circumstances that we find ourselves in. This movie that's out now about the real study that was done, or experiment that was done by that college professor, where he stopped it after 6 days, where he had some of the students become prison guards and some of the students become prisoners. And the prison guards, by the sixth day, were brutalizing the prisoners. And people, you know, I mean, they assumed their roles really, really quickly.
Well, here's the test for each one of us personally, and I think it's a real humbling experience. Next time you find yourself sitting down with a group of like-minded people engaging in what we would call black humor, you know, stop and think about what you're really doing and how, you know, whether or not you're being funny or demeaning. And it's very humbling, I think, in the sense that when you get around people like you and you start talking in phrases that you're comfortable with and you start using humor you're comfortable with, it gets to be demeaning more than funny.
What do you mean by black humor?
Well, that's where you make fun of bad circumstances.
Oh, okay, so you're not talking about racial humor.
Maybe dark humor, black. I've always used the phrase black humor with it. Yeah, no reference at all to skin color or anything like that.
Right. Okay.
And the idea where you go and you start making fun of circumstances that you're around.
Right.
That you know darn well would be very distasteful if said outside of the setting that you're in.
Sure, sure.
And it's kind of humbling if you stop and think about what it is you're doing and what it is that you're saying and what is the real intent behind it. And that's what happens with, you know, this paramedic and his police buddies. And I think that's probably what happened with my buddy down in Key West, Florida.
Yeah. Amazing story. Rama, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. And I hope all is well in Williamstown, Vermont. And thank you for the call. It's great.
Go Bernie.
Yeah, there you go. I appreciate it. Kim in Phelan, California. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Yes, this is just a little food for thought. But maybe we should consider licensing, bonding, and insuring our police officers in the way a notary public would be, or a home health care worker or something like that. And that type of field.
Well, that was my earlier point, that basically they are they're licensed by the you know, whatever the agency they work for, the state, the county, the municipality, and basically they're insured by the taxpayers. You know, the cop who killed Eric Garner isn't having to pay that $5 million settlement out of his pocket. It's coming out of the taxpayers' hide, and you know, that cop should be paying part of that price. I mean, there should be consequences to behaviors.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, just something that gives them some skin in the game.
So it'd be like malpractice for doctors.
Right, and it's not as easy for one agency to pass off a bad egg to another agency.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because there'd be some sort of liability with the previous agency if he had a previously
you know, made some poor choices.
Makes perfect sense, Kim. And I think that, you know, once we start holding police accountable, genuinely accountable, the culture of policing, I mean, there's a bunch of other things that need to be done as well, but as a starting point, the culture of policing, I believe, will change. Kim, thank you for the call. John in Cayucos, California. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good.
Ed, I know we've been talking about Sandra Bland. That's a horrible, horrible thing that happened, but I'm going to switch it up a little bit if you don't mind.
Sure.
Regarding on Monday morning, I rarely watch Morning Joe because I have a perfectly good TV and I don't want to destroy it. But I did because they said they promised a segment on Bernie Sanders.
Uh-huh.
So they actually did get a whole segment on Bernie Sanders, and it lasted quite a while. They had their whole panel there, Harold Ford and Mika, of course, and Willie Geist and all them.
Right.
And they kept saying that Bernie was tapping in to, you know, the moment of the time with the minimum wage and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Everything that Bernie stands for. I'm like, they're so wrong. Bernie's not tapping in to the moment. The moment is tapping into Bernie Sanders because he's been saying this stuff since the 60s.
Yeah.
And we need to wake people up to this. And it brought about the thing that they said about Bernie not attracting the minority voters. And it made me start thinking, Bernie's a very humble man, it seems to me. And I think we need to help Bernie. And we need to, I mean, I'm a 53-year-old white guy, grew up in L.A. And I've had relationships, you know, with black people all my life and Hispanics. I have no problem with anybody. And it seems to me like we need to help Bernie. We need to help spread his message. And I live in an area now in California that's a little bit, it's not too diverse.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, John, there's a week from today, there's a nationwide Bernie gig that you can create a local meetup for. And Bernie's going to be talking to people all over the country 1 week from today. Today being Wednesday, today's Wednesday the 22nd, so it'd be, Wednesday the 29th? And you can sign up for it over at BernieSanders.com. And meanwhile, thank you for the call. Meanwhile, I just got an email from Hillary Clinton saying, would you like to join me for dinner? Click here to enter the sweepstakes. Okay, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, she didn't actually say sweepstakes. That I guess that would be illegal, but, you know, it's a click here if you want to join me for dinner. You and maybe not, maybe. Welcome back, 10 minutes before the hour. I've got to start finding nice things to say about Hillary Clinton. Anyway, Morris in Long Beach, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Morris, what's up?
Professor, were those some white folks in the restaurant you were talking about the other day where the kid was rather unruly?
Yeah, everybody was white, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay, so there are some cultural racial differences because in my family, you know, from my grandmother, my mother, alcoholic stepfather, there's no way we could have expressed ourselves in that manner. We wouldn't have had 4 seconds, let alone 45 minutes. As a matter of fact, Professor, we wouldn't have made it into the restaurant. That was a reflection on that kid's parents. And that should be the narrative right there. I can't believe that guy kind of any kind of notoriety, a child. Unbelievable. And by the way, Bernie Sanders is kicking butt. How do you know he's kicking butt? Because they're coming up with all this negative stuff. They're trying to dislodge all of his support. He's not getting along with blacks and all that. He don't need black people today. He need black people in November 2016. This is a long race, okay? Yeah. So the man is doing real well. If he was in last place and nobody would talk about him, no problem, but he's stepping on toes. He reminds me of my pastor. He's stepping on toes. And God bless Donald Trump, as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to let it out to Fox. I'm a registered Republican, Professor, but I'm an Abraham Lincoln Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is good for our party. Donald Trump is good for the Republican Party. Go, Donald.
Well, Morris, I'm increasingly convinced that Donald Trump is doing what he's doing to take down Jeb Bush and position Scott Walker for the race. Over at Democratic Underground, they've got a bunch of Trump's quotes. You know, he calls Krauthammer a loser and a jerk. He says Jeb Bush can't negotiate his way out of a paper bag. He calls John McCain a dummy. He goes after Jeb Bush again by saying he has to like the Mexican illegals because of his wife. He calls Lindsey Graham a jackass. He says Rick Perry gets glasses so that people will think he's smart. He has never attacked Scott Walker. I'm telling you, Donald Trump is the leading edge of the Scott Walker campaign.
But Scott Walker can easily be defeated because he can't articulate. This guy,
I don't think so.
Talk him in a debate.
Do not underestimate Scott Walker. Do not. Wisconsin is a very blue state, and he won three elections in a row there.
Okay, remember Newt Gingrich? One of the qualities that Newt Gingrich has was he was sharp. I wasn't that supportive of him, but he was very sharp on his feet. Scott Walker's not like that. He'll crumble. I'm telling you, Professor, he just doesn't have it.
I hope you are right. I hope and pray that you are right, but I am really concerned.
Bernie Sanders.
I mean, Scott Walker right now does not even walk into or out of the state capitol in Wisconsin in a public way. He as all other governors have. He uses the tunnels underneath. He's like Mole Man. You know, he sneaks into the capitol and sneaks out of the capitol. This guy has the mentality of Richard Nixon and the policies of Ronald Reagan. And
you think you're going to fool enough people to get into the White House, Professor?
I think there's a very good chance that Scott Walker could be our next president. It scares the hell out of me.
You ain't lying, my brother. That scares the hell out of me, too. That'd be an impossibility. That guy can't even articulate. And he's going to get into the White House?
I think so. I really do. And I think that, and I'm increasingly believing that Donald Trump is, you know, if the billionaire class wants Scott Walker, and who's a member of the billionaire class? Donald Trump. I think he's in there to, you know, and the billionaires don't care about political parties. They don't care about the future of the Republican Party. They just care about raw power. You know, they want one of their, you know, they want their guy to be president. And their guy is Scott Walker. He's not Jeb Bush, in my opinion. Morris, thank you for the call. It's always great talking with you. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the end. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, here with you. Flo in Sunrise, Florida. Flo, you wanted to wave a flag and alert us to something about GMO labeling?
Yes, I think they're going to take a vote on having a national label, and if there's GMOs in the stuff, they don't want to put it on the label.
In other words, forbidding communities or states from having labeling requirements.
Well, I think that's what it's all about. Van Hollen's against it, and McGovern from Massachusetts.
Right.
I talked to them briefly. But another thing, last night there was a special on, public broadcasting, and they said before 2050, they're going to raise our produce in, like, factories, Tom, and there already is one. They have lights. The food requires less water. It's modified. I mean, it's almost sickening to me.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, looked uniform. Do you want to eat that stuff? Because it didn't look very appetizing to me.
Yeah, and we wonder why we have an epidemic of autism and obesity and all these other things. Flo, thank you for the call. I had a really, by the way, I'm just going to go off on a tangent here for just a second because Flo reminded me of it. I've been wanting to talk about this for a couple of days. Over the weekend, I had a fascinating conversation with an old friend of mine who is a professor of neuroscience in Australia. And he was telling me about all this research that's coming out about how gut bacteria not only influences things like health and particularly weight, but also influences mood and temperament. And we've all taken antibiotics, and we've all screwed up our gut bacteria. And I've taken a lot, particularly since my surgery 3 years ago, and you know, it getting screwed up and my getting quite sick as a result of it. And so I've been taking probiotics. And I've actually noticed, and I thought maybe I was just imagining this, but from what my friend Richard was telling me, I'm not, that when I remember to take my probiotics with every meal or before every meal or the appropriate time, depending on which one, you know, because some you can't take with food and some you can, I feel better. I feel more energy. I feel more optimism. And when I forget to take my probiotics, I mean, I can tell because my guts behave differently, but also the rest of my body behaves differently. There's something huge going on here. And in fact, there's another piece of science. Well, this is going to have to wait for tomorrow because we've still got a bunch of callers here, but about symbiosis in the gut. Anyhow, we'll get to that in just a minute. Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Say, I've been listening all day about this, and my issue with it is that so many times...
What's the it you're talking about?
The issue of prison reform and what's going on with reforming police departments,
okay,
brutality and stuff.
Right.
And this is all socioeconomic. And it's the thing of it is that the president talked about prison reform, and he left out an intricate part of it. And it is, how are we going to fund this? And when you are still shipping jobs like the Trans-Pacific Partnership overseas, and you start releasing prisoners that are trained. No, hold it. Can I back up a moment? The blind eye politics from the mid-90s to the 2008 of illegal immigration, which harmed the unions and harmed wage growth for working people. Now, we're still sending jobs overseas, but we want to do prison reform and put these, which sometimes will be controlled, over-controlled, and forced into the job market in other ways, that I feel that it could be detrimental.
So the net of what you're saying is that
for the working class,
yeah, is that it's going to further dilute the labor market, and yeah, you're probably right. Although we're only talking about a couple million people who are in prison, it's a couple million people is a lot of people, but the American workforce is 115 million, if my recollection is correct. So it'd be less than 1%. You know, of arguably an increase in unemployment that you'd see is if everybody who's in jail got out. But I do agree with you that the billionaire class, at least the conservative billionaire class, is rather pleased with the idea of a very, very loose labor market, however they get there, whether it's through prison reform or through not prosecuting illegal employers, et cetera. Excellent point, Randy. Thank you for the call. Dolores in Mesa, Arizona. Hey, Dolores, you want to talk about Sandra Bland?
Hi, Tom. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you. My husband introduced me to your show, and I just love it.
Thank you.
Great. What I first wanted to say to you is I do agree with you about Hillary. I wish I could say something nice about her, too, because she's just that excitable. But I love her. I want her to be president, but I think we have to really be careful with Scott. The reason I called was with Sarah Bland, Sandra Bland.
Sandra Bland, yeah.
I just wanted to give you, tell you about a story that happened to me.
We have just 1 minute, Dolores. 1 minute until the end of the show. Go for it.
Okay. Okay, so up in Reno, Nevada, I was coming home in the morning around, it was about 8 o'clock. I'm a registered nurse and I work in the ER. And I get pulled over by this policewoman. And she says, you know, I saw your car. It looked like it was kind of weaving a little bit. And I said, oh, I've been having some trouble with it, you know. And so she said, well, could I have your license? I said, sure. And she goes and runs it and comes back. And she gives me my license. She says, you know, she says, I smell alcohol in your car. And I go, what? I go, how could you smell alcohol? I said, I'm coming home from work. I'm a registered nurse. And she goes, well, I smell alcohol. And I said, well, maybe it's the alcohol I use in the hospital. And she goes, well, I'm going to give you a breathalyzer. And she said, if you refuse it, I'm going to have to arrest you. And she said, your car will be impounded and everything. And I said, fine, I'll take the breathalyzer. And I said, but it's going to be zero.
Right.
And she gives me the breathalyzer, and I fail it twice. And I said, I feel it twice. And she goes, you know, I think you're trying to play with the breathalyzer, and, you know, you're trying to.
Dolores, you're going to have to finish the story tomorrow or later on in the week. I'm sorry, we're flat out of time. But it's an amazing story. Thank you for the call. Well, I was just going to say we'll be back. We won't be back. It's the end of the day. Thanks so much for being with us today. We will see you tomorrow. Same time, same place, and don't forget, democracy requires you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.